Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam 3rd Canto, Chapter 5, Vidura's Talks with My Trainer, Text 29.
Matatmadmukuranad Aantattam Vijayata Kaya Karana Katratma Bhutendriya Manomaya Vaikarikas Taijasascha Tamasaschityahan Kida Mahatattvadvakuranad Ahantattvam Vijayata Kayakaranakatratma Bhutendriya Manomaya Vaikarikas Taijasascha Tamasas Chityahan Svida.
From the causal truth.
Vakurvana,
being transformed.
Aham,
false ego.
Tattvam,
material truth.
Vijayata,
became manifested.
Kaya,
effects.
Karana,
cause.
Kartri,
doer.
Atma,
soul or source.
Bhuta,
material ingredients.
Indriya,
senses.
Mana,
maya, hovering on the mental plane.
Vaikarika,
the mode of goodness.
Taijasa,
the mode of passion.
Cha,
and
tamasa,
the mode of ignorance.
Cha,
and
iti,
thus.
Aham,
false ego.
Tridha,
three kinds. Translation.
Mahatattva,
or the great causal truth, transforms into false ego, which is manifested in three phases, cause, effect, and the doer. All such activities are on the mental plane and are based on the material elements, gross senses, mental speculation. The false ego is represented in three different modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Purport. A pure living entity in his original spiritual existence is fully conscious of his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of the Lord. All souls who are situated in such pure consciousness are liberated, and therefore they eternally live in bliss and knowledge in the various Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. When the material creation is manifested, it is not for them. Eternally liberated souls are called Nityamuktas, and they have nothing to do with the material creation. The material creation is meant for rebellious souls who are not prepared to accept subordination under the Supreme Lord. This spirit of false lordship is called false ego. It is manifested in three modes of material nature, and it exists in mental speculation only. Those who are in the mode of goodness think that each and every person is God, and thus they laugh at the pure devotees who try to engage in the transcendental service of the Lord. Those who are puffed up by the mode of passion try to lord it over material nature in various ways. Some of them engage in altruistic activities as if they were agents appointed to do good to others by their mental speculative plans. Such men accept the standard ways of mundane altruism, but their plans are made on the basis of false ego. This false ego extends to the limit of becoming one with the Lord. The last class of egoistic conditioned souls, those in the mode of ignorance, are misguided by identification of the gross body with the self. Thus all their activities are centered around the body only. All these persons are given the chance to play with false egoistic ideas. But at the same time, the Lord is kind enough to give them a chance to take help from scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam so that they may understand the science of Krishna and thus make their lives successful. The entire material creation, therefore, is meant for the falsely egoistic living entities hovering on the mental plane under different illusions in the modes of material nature. Om Gyan Chimadagasya Gyan Gyan Shrakya Sakshamani Tami Tadmai Shri Gyan Maha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Bhagavan Sanam Shri Dvaita Galara Shivasri Goa Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This chapter is entitled Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. Vidura has been directed by Uddhava, the dear devotee of the Lord, who is also the Lord's mantri or advisor. You remember how the Lord sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to deliver a message to the gopis, simultaneously giving Uddhava a chance to learn about the spontaneous intimate love the residents of Vrindavan had for Krishna. Because it was a very delicate situation, there was so much grief in Vrindavan due to Krishna's apparent absence. Therefore, the Lord deputed Uddhava and simultaneously gave Uddhava the chance for that mercy of learning from the residents of Vrindavan. And at the end of Uddhava's visit, he concluded, "Just let me take birth as a clump of grass in Vrindavan so that the gopis may walk and give me the dust of their lotus feet on my head." But Uddhava was with the Lord when he left this world, removed himself from ordinary vision. And Vidura came upon Uddhava in the course of Vidura's travel. Vidura is actually the son of Vyasadeva. And Uddhava directed him, "You approach Maitreya." Actually, Vidura is already perfect in transcendental knowledge, but still, he acted in this way. He approached Maitreya, because that's the transcendental system. Uddhava had instructed him to do that, and so Vidura did it. It's not a sign of weakness that you take advice and that you ask questions about the glories of Krishna. Vidura is showing that. He's already perfect, yet he's asking questions about the glories of the Lord and presenting himself that he needs guidance and instruction. If Vidura can do that, he's perfect, not to speak of us. What were the first questions that Vidura asked Maitreya? You may remember from the beginning of this chapter. Uddhava told Vidura to go talk to Maitreya and find out about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities. But the first questions that Vidura asked apparently were not directly about what Krishna was doing in terms of his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Vidura first asked questions about the nature of life for those who are trapped in material existence. In this way, Uddhava Madhura showed his humility and also his concern for suffering living entities. He didn't immediately ask, tell me about Krishna's personal activities. Also, because Krishna's departure from mundane vision had just happened, it was a very traumatic subject matter to inquire about Krishna's personal activities. So Madhura delayed it. He first asked questions about material illusion, and then he asked questions about the Lord's Purusha incarnations for maintaining the material world. You see, there's an art to Bhagavad Dharma. You can learn that art by carefully studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Don't think that you've read it once, you've read it twice, you've read it thrice, or you've been reading it for 15 years, therefore you have all the information mastered. The Bhagavatam is not simply a collection of information. It is a living, spiritually alive experience. And therefore you'll see newer and newer things in your reading of Srimad Bhagavatam as you continue on in your service and sacrifice for Lord Krishna. Yes, it is true that Krishna is non-different from talks about him. He's non-different from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. But someone can only realize that who reads Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam in the spirit that these scriptures direct. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita told us, Bhakta Sime Sakha Cheti Rahasyam Kyetaruttamam. Arjuna, because you are my devotee and you're my friend, therefore I'm speaking to you this greatest mystery about the relationship between yourself and the Supreme Self. And also, later in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to teach you. Idam Sita Guyatamam Prabhakyam Yanasuyade Yan Vijana Sahitam Yajjatra Mokshita Shupa. I'm going to teach you that knowledge which will give you relief, moksha, from all ashubha, inauspicious circumstances. You're going to get from me Jnana and Vijnana, theoretical knowledge and realized knowledge. Because Anasuya, you're not envious of me. If we take shelter of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam with a non-envious, submissive attitude, if we take up the process to establish a relationship with Krishna by becoming his devotee, his friend, then we can understand the great transcendental mystery. How do you show your friendship for Krishna? By taking his mission to heart. That is also how you show friendship with the spiritual master. Friendship with the spiritual master doesn't mean you pat him on the back. It means that you have identification with the mission of the spiritual master. Similarly, friendship with Krishna doesn't mean that you prematurely are thinking you're playing in the pastures with Krishna and Balaram. Friendship with Krishna means that you take up the order of Krishna. You make the mission of Krishna your mission. If you read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in that kind of spirit, then you'll see that Krishna is directly there. He is Bhagavad Gita. He is Srimad Bhagavatam. But if you read with the viewpoint of mental speculation, then you won't get that same experience. That's why when impersonalists chant the Hare Krishna mantra, I don't know if you've ever heard it, but impersonalists, they're not averse to chanting Hare Krishna a lot of them. They just offensively think that the Maha Mantra is a means to fix your mind on the oneness, and that you'll get beyond the mantra once your mind is concentrated by virtue of the mantra. You'll go beyond it and then you realize you are infinite as you are. This is offensive. Such persons, even though they're chanting Hare Krishna, don't get any benefit because they're not fulfilling the proper procedure, the proper consciousness requirements for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Krishna is in control of everything. He doesn't allow himself to be manhandled, so to speak, by those of dubious motives. Like I was talking to some of you the past few days about various occurrences in your material sojourn before coming to Krishna consciousness. And I was just a little bit intrigued how common it is to allow oneself to be put in so many exploitive situations simply because of false hopes. Situations in which you lose your honor, your purity, your integrity, even your money. You even put yourself into danger. One devotee was telling me how she was pushed off a balcony onto the ground below. Concrete, not the ground, not the concrete. I said, well, that sounds horrible. Well, at the time I didn't think it was any big deal. This is an age of Kali-Yuga. Somebody to push you off a balcony, you know, sort of ground floor and then the next floor. And you land on concrete, and she landed on her back. She could have landed on her head. Yeah. I didn't think it was a big deal. Kali-Yuga. You go through so many abominable circumstances and you think, eh, it's no big deal. That's the effect of the mode of ignorance. You're being tortured and abused and smashed and crushed and ground up, but you think, eh, it's no big deal. That is the effect of sinful activity. You can't even see how you're trashing yourself out and everyone's trashing you. The effect of material nature is such that we harm ourselves and we think it'll be all right. We harm ourselves and we think that's not so much of a problem. This is what happens when the mode of passion combines with the mode of ignorance. Mode of passion means intense activity to achieve material goals. Mode of ignorance means intoxication, complete bewilderment. You know, what you do doesn't even make sense from a materialistic point of view. That's mode of ignorance. And this is what you have going on, ignorance and passion all the time. What is the cure for such madness? To take shelter of Krishna's holy name, take shelter of Krishna's presence as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. You can see again and again how taking shelter of the holy name, taking shelter of Krishna as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and then when you're more advanced, you can take shelter of Krishna and Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can see again and again how this destroys the tendency to destroy yourself.
so often we're pleading with devotees, please don't destroy yourself. Don't abuse yourself. Treat yourself with dignity, honor. Give yourself a chance to be pure. By properly taking self-care, Krishna's presence as the holy name, as the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, you regain your sense of dignity and honor, and you actually begin to realize that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vidura first asks Maitreya about the common people, showing that even though Vidura is perfect, he's concerned with the sufferings of those who have entered into this material world for the purpose of rebelling. As Prabhupada writes, the material creation and its manifestation is not meant for the Nityamuktas, the eternally perfect living entities who live in perfect cooperation with Krishna. This material world is not meant for them. Who is the material world meant for? Rebellious souls who are not prepared to accept subordination under the Supreme Lord. This spirit of false lordship is called false ego. It is manifested in three modes of material nature, and it exists in mental speculation only. It's not a reality, it's an idea. In material life, you're being conducted by an idea, which is a concoction. You know about people who, it's readily understood, are conducted by ideas. Maybe in your university life, you met persons who were, had some political idea, and they rallied around that. Or even if they had some idea that you can sympathize with, like stopping animal slaughter, still it's an idea. They didn't understand the full scope of being kind to all living entities. You can see the power of an idea. Or maybe you knew some feminists who, you know, we're rallying around that idea. So, the whole of material existence is an idea. Those who are eternally liberated don't get this idea, this mental speculation. But those who are in material existence are there because they're conducted by a mentally speculated idea. We are rebelling. We are not going to accept subordination to the Supreme Lord. We're doing our own thing. Therefore, as Prabhupada writes, all these persons are given the chance to play with false egoistic ideas. You can visualize a little kid, maybe in a playpen, playing around with toys. So, here you are in the pen of material existence, and you're playing with false egoistic ideas. In listening and discussing with the people who came for the workshop, I could see this is what's going on. They didn't have a clue of who they were or what they're doing in this world. And they all spoke of how they were feeling such pressure, work pressure, peer pressure. Maybe you all have forgotten what it's like. So much pressure that you have to do things this way. Even in something that's supposed to be so private and nectarian as personal relationships with the partner. As we said these days, they said, such pressure to do it, to package a relationship, to push on a relationship in a certain way. I said, well, why does it have to be that way? Just kind of innocently asked, why? Well, that's just the way it is. There's such pressure. Your relationship has to be this way. Then why? Well, do anything different. It's too difficult. It's amazing that most of them, in evaluating their relationships, we have them evaluate their three most important relationships. And most of them said that they had very good relationships with their best friends. Their best friends gave them support and understanding. But most of them said they rarely see their best friends. One person said, yes, that's probably why, you know, they have good relationships with them. They don't really see them. But when they were discussing their partners, almost all of them said trouble, ups and downs, rocky, rocky road. Or one person who was positive said, it's great now. But they all were feeling this compulsion. I must have a partner. And we should do certain things together. So I asked, why do you feel this compulsion? And why must you live a certain way in your relationships? Oh, you don't understand, there's so much pressure. It has to be done that way. Probably you all have forgotten a lot of that. How it's like to live under the gun of material nature. Prakrite kriyamanam gunai karmani sarva. What is the first question that Vidura asked Maitreya? He said, we can see in this world that conditioned souls make karmic endeavors to be happy, but what they get never satisfies them, and their problems are never mitigated. There's never any relief from their problems by these endeavors. The endeavor to achieve karmic results never brings satisfaction. You never get a sense of, oh, I'm satiated. Yes. You know that feeling you get after you take some nice prasad? You feel satiated. You feel, yes, I'm peaceful, contented. You never get that feeling from karmic activities. No satiation, no relief from distress. In fact, the activities cause more distress. Vidura is asking Maitreya about that. Now we're hearing about the nature of rebellion. Most of you would not think of yourself in your karmic life as being a rebel. But what you were actually doing was rebelling against the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You were declaring your insubordination. Now, how do you declare your insubordination? How many of you went around with a t-shirt saying, I hereby declare my insubordination to the Supreme Lord? No, none of you did that. So how did you do it? You declared, in effect, your insubordination by opting to serve your uncontrolled senses. That's how you declare your insubordination. That's how you declare your rebellion. I will let my senses talk to me and decide what is good. That is the rebellion. I don't want to hear about Dharma. I just want to hear my senses talking to me. That is the rebellion. And this rebellion is pushed forth by the false ego. The whole activity from beginning to end takes place on the platform of mental speculation. A false idea. Because of false ego. If you really want to get deeper into this verse, basically you're finding out that the origin of material existence is false ego. Mahatattva is the manifested material energy. Pradhan is the unmanifested. So the Mahatattva, as stated here, the manifested material energy transforms into false ego. And then everything comes from that. In this way, you can understand from every point of view that material existence is the expression of false ego. You're operating within an atmosphere that's produced of false ego. And you're acting with false ego. So how can there be any success? We hear in the purport how even those who are engaged in altruistic activities, Prabhupada writes, some of them engage in altruistic activities as if they were agents appointed to do good to others by their mental speculative plans. And these plans are made, he writes, on the basis of false ego. This is the trap. Unless you can get out of this network of false ego in a material existence that is a transformation of false ego. Unless you can get out of this, all your plans will be frustrated. Now, how do you get out? The door is going to ask about the glories of Krishna. By hearing and chanting the glories of Krishna, you get out of this network of false ego. We want to see how each day leads to an increase in attachment for the holy name of the Lord and swimming in the ocean of the glories of the Lord. Sometimes you may feel a little dry. Then you know you have to freshen your relationship with the holy name and the glories of the Lord. Even in a mundane relationship, what happens when things start getting a little dry? And the persons decide, well, we need to go on a trip together and spend more time with each other and kind of regain the flavor. Maybe some of you don't like that. You think like that if you've been very busy in the mode of passion. Maybe a lot of you weren't so busy, so you had time to kill. Generally, when you have lots of time to kill and you're with somebody all the time, you're thinking, maybe we need to get away from each other in order to experience the freshness. But for those who are laboring hard in passionate pursuits, they think the opposite. You know, we got to find some time to be together and kind of reignite our relationship. Sometimes we periodically become a little dry in Krishna consciousness. And we realize, I've got to put a little more emphasis on my hearing and chanting, my contact with the glories of the Lord. Then immediately you'll notice you spring back to life, like a garden that hasn't had water. And you water it, and immediately the garden perks up. So immediately you'll notice your devotional feet are perking up. How is it that you get into problems when day after day after day you don't take proper shelter of hearing and chanting? Even you're engaged in devotional service. You see, you have to engage in devotional service according to the way Krishna wants. You can't just say, well, I may not be hearing and chanting sufficiently, but I'm busy in Krishna's service. That's all right, but service to Krishna is done in a way that Krishna wants. Suppose if you're married and your husband or wife says, why do you care that I never talk to you? I don't have time to talk to you. I'm so busy working. for the behalf of the family. That wouldn't make it. Can't you see what I'm doing? I'm working 12 hours a day and working overtime all for the sake of the family. So if I don't have time to talk to you, you know, what is it? Why does it matter? Just see what I'm doing. No, you won't accept that. You'll say, look, in this relationship, we have to push it on in a certain way. We have to carry it on in a certain way. There must be time for working, time for talking. Similarly, in relationship to Krishna, you need to do things Krishna's way. We want to be busy in Krishna's service according to how Krishna wants us to be busy. And part of being busy is taking the time for hearing the glories of the Lord, chanting the glories of the Lord. All our other devotional activities spring forth from the hearing and chanting. Sometimes, undoubtedly, you're going to feel a bit dry. Sometimes you're going to feel material nature attacking your mind. What are you doing here? How long do you think you can go on pretending you're a saint? What are your old friends doing now? Why are you living like this, accepting such inconvenience? You're so great. You're competent. Why are you living like this? Rendering menial devotional service. You're the Lord. Oh, okay, you're not the Lord, but, you know, you're great. Get out there and achieve. Everybody else is. So sometimes this affects your mind. Or, there's no doubt, you may come to bhakti with fresh memories of how you were frustrated in sense gratification. I know this for many of you. When you walk in the door of bhakti yoga, you know, I've had it, that's it. Right out. I did this, I did that. I was used, I was abused. I tried to lord it over and was crushed. Generally, the first thing you admit is that I was used and abused. You don't admit that you tried to lord it over. I was talking to someone yesterday. He was telling me in so many words that previously, one partner had, given her the flick. I said, well, so he dumped you. No, he was a jerk. Yeah. I mean, anyway, it all worked out, so. He dumped you. No. We don't want to admit that we tried to play the game of material nature and got crushed. And rather than admit that, I was abused, I was used, I was exploited. Well, what are you doing playing the game in the first place? We have to recognize that we have this psychology of rebellion, insubordination. It's amazing how we do not consider our senses to belong to Krishna. Isn't it amazing? It feels so natural and spontaneous that my senses are mine, meant for my pleasure. And it may even seem kind of artificial to plan how to use the senses for Krishna's service, like a battle, because you're fighting your mental concoction. Your mental speculation has concocted a way of existence that is insubordinate. And therefore, you're feeling that mental concoction. You're feeling that mental speculation. And within the cloud of that speculation, it just seems totally artificial that your senses just serve Krishna all the time. You're willing to accept some of the time and do a little good work for Krishna. But all the time? These are my senses. They're sent for me. Does anybody understand that? Yeah, Hare Krishna, yeah, but he sent to the men for me. It's just natural. This is our insubordination. This is the disease. There should be comforts for you. There should be opportunity for self-aggrandizement, building your own plans and goals to satisfy you. And of course, you'll do a little charity work too, no doubt about it. So, during these workshops, we're hearing from these people, and very interesting. What was my conclusion? Of course, I already knew, but the conclusion was obvious. They had nothing. And they were working so hard. They had nothing. Nothing was going for them. And they weren't down and outers. Some of them were materially well situated. But they had nothing. You get such an intense sense of a vacuum, zero. Although there was such frantic activity, they confessed to changing relationships at the drop of a hat, consuming things, consuming people. No one had any spiritual plans. No one had any plans to purify their life. No one had any plans to learn how to control their mind and senses. And no one had any idea what the self is. This is the deep ignorance. Therefore, Vidura begins this chapter by asking questions about the common person's entanglement in material nature. The fact is that for the common person, unless he or she can understand his or her real situation in material nature, such a person will not be able to understand the glories of the Lord. Vidura is first trying to establish that understanding of the real position of the common person in illusion. And also, he's hesitating to directly ask about Krishna because there's such a trauma due to Krishna's recent departure from mundane vision. You can learn so much by studying the Bhagavatam, how the chapters develop. You can notice the various ways that the members of the dialogue use for making the conversation develop. All these things you can learn. Vidura says in the second verse to Maitreya, O great sage, everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to attain happiness, but one finds neither satiation nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Any questions? Obtain transcendental knowledge, Divya Gyan, and act upon it. and you'll start to see what's going on. You put your energies powerfully into devotional service in a humble way, and then you'll see Krishna use you. Don't think that, okay, I don't want to be the doer, so I won't do anything, I won't do so much. Act with great intensity. Act with great dedication, while understanding that one is just a humble servant to Krishna. Brahma had the same anxieties. You'll read later in this third canto, Brahma's prayers for creative energy. He had to arrange the whole cosmic manifestation. And so he was worried, I'll really get puffed up. Suppose you were Brahma. You think you're worried now. What if your job was to arrange all the planetary systems? That would really be an opportunity for false ego. Brahma was concerned, I'll get puffed up, I'll get proud through these activities. Krishna told him, first of all, any service, any responsibility that you take up for me is already packed with blessings and mercy. That is one thing. And the other thing is that you always should take steps to declare your subordination. Always recognize that you're a tiny part and parcel of the Lord. And both things have to be there. The mercy is there already packed into the service, and simultaneously one has to constantly express and acknowledge one's humble condition. We want dynamic engagement. We want dynamic execution of devotional service with the humility that I'm just humble servant of my spiritual master and humble servant to Krishna. When we think, oh, just see my abilities, just see what I'm doing, then we're in trouble. But that doesn't mean, okay, I don't want to get puffed up, I don't want to be proud, so I won't endeavor so much. So many of you struggled and endeavored. So don't be afraid of learning in devotional service. Krishna will teach you. That's why we emphasize solid, dynamic engagement in the Lord's service based upon hearing the holy name. Everything expands from hearing the holy name. If there's something around here that needs to be done, we don't want you thinking, well, I'm not the doer. That's why we're always encouraging you all to push ahead in devotional service. Don't just rest on your laurels. Imagine the real. A real servant of Krishna is always thinking, I haven't actually done anything for Krishna. There's still so much to do. I've never done any real service for Krishna. I've just been acting for my false ego. When will I do some real service? You always think like that. Here's a good combination. Act with great dynamic energy for Krishna's pleasure, and always serve devotees. If you do both those things together, then you're safe. In the past, we've seen problems when devotees who have a lot of material abilities act very powerfully for Krishna's service, and they do get some things done which are needed, but they didn't manifest a service attitude toward devotees, and therefore their ego did not become purified. So what happened was gradually they were using Krishna consciousness as an excuse to assert their
abilities and their pride. You know, you can't do much in the material world, but sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness and see, now I can really do something. That's true, but to go on with such endeavors in Krishna consciousness, you have to become purified. That's what Krishna wants. If you don't serve devotees, if you don't have a service attitude toward devotees, then yes, your false ego can expand without being checked, and you run into trouble in Krishna consciousness. But if you always try to render humble service to the devotees while simultaneously acting dynamically, it's a very safe position. Anything else? Yes? And not what? Do you understand what devotional service is? Krishna doesn't give it out very easily. We actually have no right to perform devotional service. We don't have any of the qualifications. But Lord Chaitanya has given us this chance in the most degraded age. We should understand how rare it is to have this opportunity, how undeserved it is. That's why you should study Prabhupada's books exhaustively. Those books will always keep you in your place. Every purport, you know, you get the message pounded home to you. You're not the body, under the spell of material nature. Sometimes some people say, well, these books are a little repetitive. Yes, that's because your problems are repetitive. Your mentality is repetitive, and Prabhupada knows that. So along with presenting you the most intimate truths of Krishna's pastimes, simultaneously Prabhupada is pounding away at your repetitive patterns, your repetitive blockages. The people who complain about that, they're always the persons who've never gotten beyond those blockages. Thank Krishna every day that you have a chance to render service. Sometimes it won't be easy. Sometimes there'll be misunderstandings. Sometimes you won't feel appreciated. Sometimes there'll be austerities, inconveniences. But that doesn't exist in the material sphere of activities. You should have heard these people talk about their work life. Most of the time is spent at work. You should have heard the austerities they have to go through. So why is it we can't do a little bit of austerity for Krishna? That's why it's very good, I think, that those who, for example, choose, those men who choose a brahmachari life have some working experience, because they'll find out by working in the material world that it is a difficult situation. And then when they become brahmacharis living in a temple, they won't become capsized by the austerities of temple life. It's like if you talk to Munichari, who's had working experience as a householder, when he hears devotees in Melbourne talking about, oh, you know, it's a little austere, or he says, have you ever worked? No. He said, do you understand what it's like have a job in the material world? Can you call up the boss and say, being a little late today, I got a little cold, I got to take a little extra rest? Devotees do that, though.
I'm a bit in the modes today, a bit in my eyes. I don't know if I can do my service.
Can you call up an employer and say that?
No, you can't do that.
Some ways I always explain this. You guys don't know what it's like.
Yeah.
To work and be surrounded by persons who are envious of you, nasty bosses, and constant foolish conversation. You know what it's like. And you have to do things. That's why I like our system in which we have opportunity for devotees to work while they're establishing themselves in Krishna consciousness. Because then, so if they choose to go the ashram route, they'll appreciate it. It's like Nalakuva will definitely appreciate it. Otherwise, the tendency is to take things cheaply. If you've never had to endeavor in the material world, you'll take the world of devotional endeavors cheaply. That's a big problem in the social welfare countries, is the dole has really doled people. On the one hand, it may be nice because for devotees who are fully engaged in devotional service, it gives them a way to maintain themselves. And it's a fact. Devotees who are fully engaged in devotional service are doing the government a favor because the tax monies are actually being used for supporting fully engaged devotees. But for those devotees who are not fully engaged in devotional service and is lounging around, it's not a very good situation to get social benefit money and just take it easy, and that's not very nice. Even one of your former prime ministers here, David Longhi, he advised devotees, take the dole while it's around. Because he doesn't understand the positive and negative effects. For those who are fully engaged in devotional service, it's helpful. And the government gets credit. The people get credit for supporting Vaishnavas. There's nothing better that the money could go for. But for those devotees who are not fully engaged in devotional service, it affects them negatively. They just get into lethargy and mumble their rounds, you know, space out their rounds throughout the day, don't do anything. Laziness and chanting? You've had enough rest, but you get drowsy? Will you ever do that if you're talking to your favorite person? Will you ever get drowsy? Has it ever happened? So why is it that we get drowsy when we're chanting the holy name if we had enough rest? That shows that we have a disease. It shows something about our consciousness, and we have to fix that by determinedly taking shelter of the holy name. It's an unhealthy condition, so you have to work to correct that. You should take enough rest so you can chant with attention. That's the purpose of taking rest,
so you can chant with attention. Don't be ashamed of taking enough rest so you can chant with attention. If you don't do that, you're a fool. Krishna says you can't be a yogi if you sleep too much or sleep too little. What's a good way of judging if you're sleeping too little? When you start to not be able to chant because of being too tired. You'll also be able to tell if you're sleeping too much because you'll be dull when you chant. So that, the chanting is a good indicator of both extremes. As for being inattentive while you're chanting, you have to every day ask yourself that question. Why am I not attracted to the holy name? That attitude will impress Krishna. Wouldn't you be impressed by someone who's always thinking, why am I not hearing Kadiravan? Why? Wouldn't you be impressed? Yeah, well, this is a sincere person. Right? It's natural. Someone's thinking, no matter how I try, I just can't hear her. Every day I try. You'd be sympathetic, wouldn't you? Just go on trying like that. Krishna's also a person. He's impressed by the devotee's efforts to hear. So don't lose hope and be depressed. Oh, excuse, I can't hear the holy name. I'm trying every day. Krishna's impressed by that effort. Yes. What is the way? The conditioned soul becomes overwhelmed by the external energy. It's a perverse situation. The inferior potency overwhelms the superior potency by the arrangement of Krishna. That can happen. Vishnu Purana says, Vishnu Shakti Pada Prota Chaitanya Abhijakarma Samgyanya. There are three energies which all are part of Vishnu Shakti. They're all in the Vishnu Shakti category. There's the internal potency of the Lord, there's the marginal potency, the living entities, and then there's the external energy which fills the living entities with godlessness, nescience, avidya. They're all Vishnu Shakti. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Esha Gunamaye Mamamaya Dratya. This divine energy of mine is very difficult to overcome. It's my maya, my illusory energy. By Krishna's arrangement, the superior energy, the spirit soul, comes under the influence of inferior potency. It's a crazy situation. Please remember what it's like to be a rebel, to be insubordinate. It doesn't mean simply to think, you know, I'm an atheist, I'm against God. Yeah, those guys, they're the... they're the bad guys. No, when your senses scream at you to do their own thing, that's the revolution, that's the rebellion, that's the insubordination. Therefore, the beginning of devotional service is controlling the mind and the senses. That's the value of living with devotees in a goal-orientated situation. There's a program for controlling your mind and senses. Sense gratification, even altruism, is an act of rebellion. and therefore you're disturbed by the effects. Yes? Give me an example. Photographs or what? You have a collection? And so, what, do you meditate on the pictures? No, I have a few pictures. I don't meditate on them. I show them to others as, you know, as a joke. You see them, Crystal? Okay. Yeah, you haven't seen them? I never showed anybody here. Pictures of me during my student days. I have a picture of, you know, my mother carrying me when she was pregnant. Yeah. We're not fanatical, you know. Throw away all your pictures. This is not Krishna consciousness, you know. So why you feel guilty you have a few pictures, or you have a lot? So what's the big deal? I'm sure there are much more important and significant things that we can analyze in your life if you want to look for attachment. So keep your pictures. We will find other things. Don't torture yourself in the name of Krishna consciousness. Find out what you should worry about. We're not going to confiscate everybody's picture collections. I remember my days of traveling Sankirtan. Sometimes we'd have to stay in a hotel, a motel. And, of course, careful to save every penny of Krishna's Lakshmi, so naturally you'd never pay the full rate for the motel. You'd always, sneak 5 brahmacharis into a motel for a bit of go through great elaborate procedures. I notice they don't care about that here in New Zealand, just that in the States, they squeeze every penny. How many people will be in the room? One, of course. So then you have to park the Sankirtan van somewhere, behind the building, and everyone's creeping around the building and, going through the back window of the motel room and saving Krishna's watch. So, when the brahmacharis, first thing when you get into the motel room, what would you do? Who knows? What? Even before that? No. Huh? No, you haven't gotten the essence of renunciation yet. You haven't understood what is true detachment. No. You don't understand what is real renunciation. First thing when you walk into the door, when you're fired up brahmachari back then, you walk in the door of the motel room. First thing, it's like clockwork. Immediately you rush in with a cloth and you cover the mirror. To avoid vanity. And then you light some incense to drive away all the ghosts and spirits. This is Krishna consciousness. Of course, there's nothing wrong with, you know, these things in of themselves, but to make a big thing out of it, you know, that's the funny thing, you know. We've been here 5 seconds, you haven't covered the mirror. Someone looks in the mirror at themselves, they'll fall down. It's that attitude. Taking these kind of things to be like main pillars in bhakti yoga. I'm not saying not to do these things. I'm just saying when you make it like, you know, this is the big thing. This is really making or breaking your Krishna consciousness. You understand? So keep your pictures. They're good laugh. Good for laughs, aren't they? Yeah, with the, you had all the rings in your nose and ears and lips and all that stuff. You got pictures of that? Huh? I'll show you mine if you show me yours. All right. Oh, glory to the Father. That is interesting.